This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The commission accused Lissu of violating some election regulations, including stopping to make unplanned addresses to masses of people.
That's Charles Combe reporting on political developments in Tanzania. Details coming up also. West African Regional Bloc ECOWAS today has lifted sanctions against Mali. And as schools in Nigeria prepare to reopen after the pandemic break, parents are expressing anxiety over the safety of their children. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Tanzania's main opposition group, the Party for Democracy and Progress, or CHADEMA, is speaking out against the call for a temporary suspension of the campaign of its presidential candidate, Tundu Lissu, who faces the incumbent, John Magufuli, in the coming general elections. Tanzania's National Electoral Commission has accused Lissu of violating several election regulations, and opposition members say they are observing the request, even as they say it is unfair, illegal, and unacceptable. Charles Kambe reports from Dar es Salaam.
A recent announcement by Tanzania's National Electoral Commission that it will suspend for 7 days from October 3rd the campaign of the outspoken opposition presidential candidate Tundu Lissu has been met with verbal protests from Tanzania's main opposition group. The commission accused Lissu of violating some election regulations, including stopping to make unplanned addresses to masses of people. Lissu says the commission's move is to silence him in a period of 1 week while President John Magufuli is taking a break from campaigning.
Lengo halisi la uamuzi huu.
I know their intention. They do not want me to be on the campaign trail during the same week that Magufuli is resting, he says, adding that they are worried of the issues that will rise, for which they have no adequate responses. It is a strategy to scare me, which I'm not going to accept. According to the recent timetable released by the National Electoral Commission, Magufuli will be having an 8-day break during the same period that Lissu has been forced to put a pause on his campaign. Lissu's supporters say this is just one of a series of efforts to shut down the opposition. Ibrahim Chawe is a member of CHADEMA and a communication officer for the CHADEMA Youth Organization. Chawe says the ruling party is guilty of the very violations for which Lissu and the opposition party have been unfairly accused. Helen Sisia, an activist and a communications specialist with Young Democrat Union of Africa, says the commission also should have the power to hold accountable the ruling party when violating the election regulations. Helen says Lissu has also sent to the National Electoral Commission his accusations concerning the ruling party violating the election campaigns, which he says the Electoral Commission seems to be ignoring. Political analyst Azaveri Loitama says the National Electoral Commission is not independent. Loitama says the commission has openly shown it is not as independent as expected, and as many people had been saying. He adds that he thinks people have now accepted that the commission is favoring the ruling party, but will try to hide behind public support to justify its actions. Clarifying the issue, the commission members say it is not their decision to suspend Lissu's campaigning and that they are only implementing what the ethics committee had agreed upon. Titus Mwanzalila is an educational officer of the National Electoral Commission. Mwanzalila says these were steps taken by the ethics committee, in which 90% of its members came from various political parties. He underscores that it is the members of myriad political parties, along with several from the government and the commission, who have made the decisions. In a statement Tuesday, October 1st, by the U.S. Embassy in Tanzania on the upcoming elections, the U.S. government says it does not support any specific candidate or party in Tanzania's upcoming elections, but supports the democratic process itself, including a genuinely free and fair election. Meanwhile, The ruling party is still emphasizing there will be a free and fair election if everyone, especially political parties, observe and obey the law. As for the opposition, its members say they believe there's still a long way to go to achieve that goal. Charles Kombe for VOA News in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa has highlighted his government's commitment to hand over close to 700,000 hectares of state-owned land to black farmers. In his latest weekly newsletter, Ramaphosa says with land ownership still concentrated in the hands of the few and agricultural primary production and value chains mainly owned by white commercial farmers, the effects of the apartheid past remain. From Cape Town, reporter Vicky Start got reaction from the Black Farmers Association of South Africa and the Farmers Federation, AgriSA.
Both farming bodies are being cautiously optimistic about the South African government's intention to transfer state-owned land to black farmers. Toko Didiza, the Minister of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, made the announcement earlier this month, saying they'll be offering a 30-year leasehold with an option to buy. And President Cyril Ramaphosa wrote about it in his weekly newsletter on Monday. He says between 1994 and March 2018, the state delivered 8.4 million hectares of land to previously disadvantaged individuals under the Land Reform Program. But Ramaphosa says this amounts to less than 10% of all commercial farmland. Dr. Lennox Mchagi, the president of the Black Farmers Association of South Africa, has welcomed news of the handover, but says as yet his organization hasn't been consulted on who will get the farms. Mchagi says members worry that friends and family members of politicians will benefit.
Because in South Africa, black farmers, we are the biggest association, so she cannot leave us out. We still want to know from her office, when is she going to call us and engage with us so that we can put up our members to have the farms. And also, we are not going to put any member, we put members that are skilled.
He says the association has 55,000 members, so there are a number of reasons why black farmers have not been succeeding in South Africa.
The retailers don't support black farmers because if they were 100% compliant, they were going to tell their suppliers, we cannot buy your potatoes because you don't have a BEE partner. So that people know that white farmers need to work with black farmers. Right now, our people are losing because those commercial farmers are buying from them for next to nothing and sell at a retail price. And on top of that, there is no funding that is coming from the government to assist our people. So we want to put an end to that.
AgriSA, the farming federation that many successful commercial farmers belong to, says it has long pushed the government to transfer state-owned land to black farmers. However, the organization's Annelise Crosby says it must be administered properly and they must guard against corruption.
There's obviously going to be a lot of people who will be applying for these leases, and it's government officials that will be deciding, the committees consisting of government officials that will be deciding to whom it should be allocated. We think it would have been better if they also had some private sector players on those committees so that it wasn't just government officials, because we know that we're really battling with corruption in this country, and also in the land reform space there's been a lot of corruption and there's still ongoing investigations into corruption in the various land reform programs.
Minister Didiza says in just over a week, application forms will be made available in the offices of the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, as well as municipal offices. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
As schools in Nigeria prepare to reopen fully after the pandemic break, some parents have expressed anxiety over the safety of their children. Reporter Gift Agriga in Abuja tells us more.
Many parents have mixed feelings about the reopening of schools. The said to worry the measures the federal and state governments put in place are not enough to keep their children safe. The parents say the coronavirus pandemic has not been fully contained in Nigeria.
It's very safe in the sense that all safety protocols are being observed. I'm comfortable with schools reopening.
I'm not happy that schools are clamoring for resumption. They honestly don't care about children's welfare. Schools should be encouraged to go online for now.
Government should be very wary of responding to those that are urging that schools should be reopened. One will not wish that our kids become victims, because collateral damage will be very brief. There is nothing wrong if kids are to lose one academic session.
I do not have problem with reopening of schools. After all, the children are well rested and they feel excited to go back to school. But my worry is on the teachers and the workers in the school. Have they been trained? Are they abreast with what is happening? If they have put checks in place.
They express fear over a possible surge of cases as schools begin to reopen. A child protection advocate, Kolawole Olatosin, said the government should endeavor to reduce the time students spend in school and ensure that schools are properly monitored.
Government should ensure that all protocols of social distancing are properly in place to ensure that we don't experience this outbreak in schools as they reopen. And also parents and school authorities also have a great role to play.
The federal government approved the reopening of all schools in Nigeria on October 12. The Minister of Education, Adamu Adamu, appealed to school administrators to adhere to the guidelines for the reopening of schools as announced by the Presidential Task Force on COVID-19. A member of the Abuja Education Board, Sunny Moniedafi, assured parents that safety measures are in place in schools to curb the spread of the pandemic.
We have put adequate measures in place, including sanitizers, hand washing machines, toilet paper, distance from each of them. So we have actually taken a lot of measures, including educating students and teachers about what they need to do to stay safe.
A school proprietor in Abuja, Ihunka Bore James, urged parents not to entertain fears as schools will strictly observe all the safety protocols.
The adherence of safety protocol is satisfactory, as we have engaged more hands to take care of the hyperactive children and acquired more safety COVID-19 equipment in line with NCDC and PTF requirements.
Schools across the country were shut down in March in a bid to contain the spread of the novel coronavirus. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
West Africa's regional bloc, ECOWAS, today lifted sanctions against Mali after the prime minister named 25 members of his transitional government cabinet. ECOWAS leaders say they were lifting the sanctions in response to significant advances towards a return to democracy in Mali. Mali's interim president, Bahan Dao, a former foreign minister and a retired colonel who was sworn in last month, yesterday appointed a mostly civilian cabinet. However, military officers will hold four central cabinet posts: defense, security, territorial administration, and national reconciliation. Among the civilian cabinet appointees are former prosecutor Mohamed Sidar Deco as justice minister and former ambassador Zini Muley as foreign affairs minister. Members of the Tuareg ethnic groups fill the agricultural and fisheries, as well as the youth and sport ministries. The movement that led the protests that built up the coup received three ministerial posts. The coup in Mali came about after months of protests over the country's bloody insurgency, economic struggles, and chronic inter-ethnic violence. Another international conference was hastily convened in Berlin on Monday, with the parties that participated in Berlin conference on Libya earlier this year. Monday's meeting aimed to push for full adherence to commitments on a peaceful resolution of the country's conflict. Morocco is hosting the second round of Libyan dialogue focusing on how to appoint the top government officials and achieve better representation of the three Libyan provinces in the State Council. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy spoke with Jason Pack, a non-resident fellow at the Middle East Institute, about the Berlin II gathering.
I wish I did, Mohamed. I can't say that I have. Rather, what we saw is a meeting hosted virtually by Germans and the UN, where the commitments such as the arms embargo and others were reiterated on the 16 participants of the Berlin Conference. However, then as now, there was no enforcement mechanism, and there's not direct naming and shaming. So yes, some violators have been hinted at, but they have not had exactly the violations of the arms embargo named and shamed in a way that would cause a deterrence for further violations.
Morocco is hosting the second round of Libyan political dialogue, which is focusing now on how to appoint the top major officials and a better representation of the three Libyan provinces in the State Council. Would that help the political solution in Libya?
Yes, of course. If these things could be accomplished, i.e., having the higher state council and the HOR agree on the heads of the semi-sovereign economic institutions, and then reforming the presidential council to have one member from each of the historic Libyan provinces, that would be a great step forward. It would constitute essentially a new transitional phase, meaning first there was the NTC, then the GNC, now the GNA, and then there would be another phase, presumably with a three-letter acronym. I don't see that that's likely to come out of the Morocco process, because we're seeing such a competition of processes whereby the UN has its process, like what we saw in Germany and in with the UN. Then the Moroccans working with their allies have a process, and the Egyptians have a military dialogue process, and the Russians and the Turks have another process. Until all these processes are unified and the Libyans are on the same page, I can't see how this is going to help getting to a political solution.
U.S. ambassador in Libya met in Cairo with Egyptian officials to discuss the unification of the Libyan military and the best approach to support the Libyan dialogue. What do you make of that?
It's nice to see that Ambassador Richard Norland was in Cairo meeting directly with Egyptian officials and supporting the military dialogue. There's been a history of American support for the Egyptian military dialogue. When Stephanie Williams, the now UN Special Envoy, was the chargé d'affaires, the acting US ambassador, she also went to Cairo to support the military dialogue. And yes, I'm happy that Norland is there. That has to be a part, just as the economic track and the replacing the heads of the semi-sovereign institutions has to be a part. But these things shouldn't all be happening with different players in different capitals, because then they are competitive processes. They need to all be unified with one solution for it to work.
What role do you see for the U.S. in Libya that could make things move on a faster pace?
Well, it should surprise you not at all that the U.S. role could be mediating all of the competitive tracks, rather than having a Morocco track and an Egypt track and a security track and a, you know, oil track. We should just bring them together. And the U.S. has equities with all of the regional players. America is allies of both Turkey and the Emirates. America has ways in which it can use economic as well as military power to effectuate things throughout the entire region. So rather than taking a position, the Americans should try to mediate between the regional players on opposite sides. Realistically, given the elections that we have going on here in this country, that's not going to happen until after them. But America has a unique position to mediate between the different players, and hopefully that could unite all of the tracks and root people into new kind of summit level process.
That was Jason Pack at the Middle East Institute speaking with my colleague Mohamed El-Shenawy. In Zimbabwe, a research report by the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute concludes that democratic elections cannot be held without military reform. Rutende Mawere reports from Harare.
The Zimbabwe Democracy Institute's new report says that 76% of those surveyed view the military as an enemy of political transition. In addition, 77% of the sampled respondents perceive the military as barring a free and fair electoral environment. 18% perceived the military as enhancing a free and fair electoral process, while 5% of the respondents said the military had no impact on the electoral environment. ZDI principal researcher Bekezela Gumbo says the report indicates there cannot be free and fair elections that counter the interests of the military.
Since 1975, the Mkakakau declaration, you'll see that the military has been the one hand-picking the leaders for ZANU-PF. And the Central Committee and everything else have been there to rubber stamp the interests of the military elite. So that's what we're arguing, that Zimbabwe is run by the military elite using ZANU-PF and the presidency.
Young fighters during the liberation struggle issued the Mugagao Declaration, setting former Zimbabwe leader Robert Mugabe as the head of ZANU. Gumbo adds that fair elections will require reforms to the security forces so they are neutral and don't punish voters for their election choices. An analyst, Owen Liwayo, who works with the Platform for Youth Development, says the research is accurate and says the military plays a clear role in the political processes in Zimbabwe.
The structural relationship between the military and ZANU-PF is made respectful and honest political contestation extremely difficult. They bring into the political fold a climate of fear, suspicion, and a systematic campaign of intimidation. This we've experienced since 1980, and it resulted in the commission of atrocities, mainly targeting opposition voices or opposition activists or even human rights defenders. You can see their role is a serious violation of Defense Act, the Police Act.
Efforts to get government comment were not immediately successful. However, ZANU-PF Information and Publicity Director Tafazwa Mugwadi dismissed the report as a donor fundraising initiative. Mugwadi said the military is very professional and rejects allegations that it interferes in political processes.
Our nation prides itself in having one of the best and the most professional force in the world, one that has left indelible marks in peacekeeping missions across Africa and the SADC region in particular. It is therefore absolute hogwash and ridiculous for anybody to suggest that the Zimbabwean military must undergo some sort of reforms.
Mugwadi maintained that those calling for security sector reform actually are pushing for regime change. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Yabaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.